Monster Man, Special Episode, Asmodeus. Hello and welcome to Monster Man, a show about monsters because monsters are great. I'm James Holloway, and I'm reading my way through the gaming books of yesteryear. And as I do, I'm talking about the monsters that I find in them. Their history, their mythology, their ecology, their imagery, and how to use them in games. Today's episode is a special episode brought to you by the generosity of my Patreon supporters, and in particular of Patreon supporter John. John asked me to go back over an episode that I had done previously, and then going back and forth, he brought up the topic of Asmodeus. Now, we talked about Asmodeus nearly 350 episodes ago, and that's mainstream episodes, not counting the specials. That was in episode 11. He's ripe for a re-examination. If you'd like to be like John and get your own special episode, remember that all you have to do is go to patreon.com/monsterman and pledge at the $5 level. And if you do that, you'll also get the rewards for the other reward tiers. At the $1 level, you'll get monthly bonus content. At the $2 level, you'll get every other week new episodes of my podcast, Patron Deities, which is all about using the deities and demigods book specifically and religion and mythology generally in fantasy role-playing games. This next episode coming out next week is the final episode of our season on Japanese mythology, and that means it's time to choose a topic for a new season. So if you were subscribed now, you'd get to get in on that vote. So John, thank you very much for your support, and I hope that you enjoy this episode. A word of, not warning, but just to be upfront about something before we go into this episode. I think my personal views, my moral views, my political views, like, I don't talk about them specifically very much on this show, but I think that you can infer what they are from the way that I discuss certain topics. You know, I don't think that I've ever made any secret of the fact that I am a big old hippie. That is maybe going to stand out a little bit more in this episode because we're talking about devils, and that means essentially we're talking about the nature of evil, and I can't talk about that without involving a moral aspect. So if you don't like it, I'm sorry, but I don't know how it is to be avoided. So I've divided this episode into several parts. Part 1. In Search of the Historical Asmodeus. So, the devil Asmodeus in the Monster Manual is the product of a number of different influences. Or is he? Perhaps it might be more accurate to say that the name Asmodeus is the product of a number of different influences. It has a long history. It goes back to the Book of Tobit. The Book of Tobit is, depending on who you ask, a book of the Bible. So my understanding is that the Catholic and Orthodox churches consider it to be canonical, Protestants consider it to be apocryphal, and Jewish scholars consider it to be interesting, but don't grant it any great authority. I speak subject to correction on those points. But my point is that the Book of Tobit is of varying canonicity depending on who you're asking and where. In the Book of Tobit, Ashmedai is a demon who is in love with, jealous of, a mortal woman, and who kills everyone who tries to marry her, until he is defeated by the intervention of the angel Raphael, who is palling around with our protagonist, Tobit. There are also tales, I know that the documents date to kind of like the 1st to 3rd centuries CE, the stories may be older than that, I don't know, about how Ashmedai is one of the demons, or maybe the demon, that Solomon bamboozles into building the temple for him. In terms of sins, Ashmedai is, or Asmodeus, or Asmodeus as he becomes known, is most often associated with the sin of lust because of the Book of Tobit, right? Because of the idea that he has a passion for this human woman and he's so jealous of her that he'll kill people to prevent, you know, them from being with her when he can't be. But that's not what every source tells us about him. Let me give you some examples. I don't know that this is actually that relevant, but I want to start with a bit from the Book of the Sacred Magic of Abramelin the Mage, translated by S.L. MacGregor Mathers. And here he talks about Asmodeus. And he groups Asmodeus in the 8 sub-princes. So the 4 princes and superior spirits. You got Lucifer, Leviathan, Satan, and Belial. And then in your 8 sub-princes, you've got Astaroth, Maggot, Asmodeus, Beelzebub, Oriens, Paimon, Araton, and Amaimon. So Asmodeus pretty highly ranked among the devils or spirits. And he has a number of subordinate spirits. He's got some that are shared with Astaroth or Maggot. And then just to himself, he's got One, Sclavak, Hepharion, Sperionat, Ormion, Mabesser, Galarion, Utifa, Precus, Baccharon, Eniri, Omet, Magid, Holba, Abadir, and Sara. So, if you ever need to name a bunch of devils, by the way, any work of historical demonology, sort you right out. Mathers offers some possible etymologies for the name, neither of which I believe are accurate. This is, may come from a Hebrew word that means to destroy, or from a Persian verb, which means to tempt, try, or prove. I know the more common view is that it comes from a Persian word that means anger. It relates the story about being employed by Solomon in building the temple, and that he was defeated and chased off into Egypt, and say that when Asmodeus was working at the building of the temple, he made use of no metal tool, but instead of a certain stone which cut ordinary stone as a diamond will glass. The Ars Goetia puts Asmodai a little bit lower in the infernal hierarchy. It says, "The 32nd spirit is Asmodai, or Asmodei. He is a great king, strong and powerful. He appeareth with three heads, whereof the first is like a bull, the second like a man, and the third like a ram. He hath also the tail of a serpent, and from his mouth issue flames of fire. His feet are webbed like those of a goose. He sitteth upon an infernal dragon, and beareth in his hand a lance with a banner. He is first and choicest under the power of a Maimon. He goeth before all other. When the exorcist hath a mind to call him, let it be abroad, and let him stand on his feet all the time of action, with his cap or headdress on. For if it be on, a Maimon will deceive him, and call all his actions to be bewrayed. But as soon as the exorcist seeth Asmodei in the shape aforesaid, he shall call him by his name, saying, Art thou Asmodei? And he will not deny it. And by he will bow down unto the ground. He giveth the ring of virtues, he teacheth the arts of arithmetic, astronomy, geometry, and all handicrafts absolutely. He giveth true and full answers unto thy demands, he maketh one invincible. He showeth the place where treasures lie, and guardeth it. He, amongst the legions of Amaimon, governeth 72 legions of spirits inferior." I gotta say that if I were listing the powers that a devil could grant me, I would probably put making me invincible ahead of teaching me arithmetic. I didn't have the best time in math class. I'm not like a math person, but I have more ability to master arithmetic than I do to become invincible, I would generally think. Meanwhile, Francis Barrett's The Magus says a little bit about Asmodai. Well, not very much. Barrett says, "Fourthly, follow the Revengers of Evil, and their prince is Asmodeus, viz. Causing judgment." As far as I can tell, all of Barrett's etymologies are spurious, but again, I am not a historian of the occult. I'm just a guy who apparently collects editions of occult texts because every now and again, they come in handy for his podcast. So what can we learn from all of this Goetia? I think not very much, right? The Bible itself is not all that concerned with demons and angels, certainly not with defining them or elaborating them. But apocryphal texts on these topics proliferate. In fact, I would say that there's a disproportionate number of such texts focus on these topics, presumably because they're not covered very much in actual Bible. So everyone seems to agree that there is a demon called Asmodai or Asmodei or Asmodeus, but the name gets applied in very inconsistent ways. And I think that this is what happens in Dungeons & Dragons. The creators just take recognizable devil names and assign them to prominent characters. Belial, Beelzebub, Moloch, Mephistopheles, Mammon, Dispater. Those are all names that there's a possibility that people will recognize. But like, if you look at the Ars Goetia, it says that Baal is the leader of these spirits. But if you look at Barrett, he says the leader is Beelzebub. If I had to pick a leader of devils or demons based on my, like, admittedly limited familiarity with the Apocrypha, to me it seems like it should be Belial or Beliar. It's almost like demonology is not an exact science. Part 2. So why is Asmodeus the ruler of hell? Here's the question. Why isn't the top devil in Dungeons & Dragons called, you know, Satan or Lucifer? If you had to pick a name for the ruler of hell, it seems like one or the other of those is the most obvious. But D&D has shied away from including them. Now, in 1977, the satanic panic of the 1980s was still in the future. Some of the texts that influenced it, like The Exorcist and Rosemary's Baby, were out there in the public consciousness. But the idea that there was some kind of conspiracy of Satanists out there, you know, was not really widespread. And it wouldn't be until the very end of the 1970s and beginning of the 1980s, with the publication of Michelle Remembers, at the beginning of the McMartin case. But we're just a few years ahead of the James Dallas Egbert case, right? That's the famous incident where the kid goes missing and he's a college student, goes missing, and a private investigator blames it on Dungeons & Dragons. That's in, like, 1979. It turned out to have nothing to do with it, surprise, surprise, but got a lot of media attention. So even as Advanced Dungeons & Dragons is coming out, I think D&D is still very much under the mainstream conventional radar, although it is becoming more and more popular. But still, I think there are a couple of explanations why Gygax, or whoever, but presumably Gary Gygax, felt a need not to use the most obvious names for D&D's chief devils. Perhaps it was religious scruples. I don't know how religious Gary Gygax was, but still you can see how he might have felt that using this real world, you know, religious element would be in poor taste. Secondly, it might just be a case of fantasy worldism. Just like the vampire in your game is not called Dracula, perhaps it was felt that names like Satan or Lucifer were just a little too on the nose. The names of lesser devils are recognizable from horror movies or from Faust or what have you, but they're not necessarily well known. And even if they were, in some cases, like if you go over to Demons and look at Demogorgon, there's nothing to know, right? We're talking about one incredibly obscure textual reference that's probably a scribal error. The names sound good, they evoke the right feeling, and people don't really know or care enough about them to care if you get them quote-unquote right. So instead of saying Satan, we're just going to say Asmodeus, and we'll be good to go. Part 3. On the Nature of Evil. So let's say that we don't particularly care about the Asmodeus of apocryphal or demonological writing, which I think is the correct attitude to take when we're talking about Dungeons & Dragons. We're just concerned with the D&D version, and the D&D version is capital T, capital D, the devil. Or not quite. We have to remember that we are not dealing with the devil that exists in myth and literature exactly. Your Satan, your old Nick, is the embodiment of all evil, but Asmodeus is the embodiment of a specific type of evil. He is the embodiment of lawful evil. The little voice that tells you that when someone talks trash, you should hit them with a brick, or that you should start fires just to hear the lovely crackle. That's not Asmodeus, right? That's Demogorgon. That's chaotic evil. Asmodeus is the voice that says collateral damage is acceptable because you're just following orders. That this contract is technically legal, even if it's not exactly fair. It says that you don't owe the person freezing on a street corner anything. Have they got something in writing? The voice that says that if they didn't want to get hurt, they should just have complied. That's Asmodeus. The worst thing about lawful evil is that it's convinced of its own righteousness. I think that cults of Asmodeus should be secret conspiracies devoted to maintaining order through evil means. Bribery, blackmail, intimidation, assassination, vigilantism. Remember, lawful evil doesn't mean you don't commit crimes. Lawful evil doesn't mean you follow the law of wherever you are, whatever it happens to be. It means you're committed to the principles of order and quote-unquote civilization, discipline, hierarchy, domination. One aspect of this is tyranny. Now, according to later characterizations, according to people who come along and expand the character of Asmodeus in later editions of the game, Asmodeus wants to rule the cosmos, and he sees this as a way to protect it against the threats that it faces, to impose his own brutal utopia, a permanent, perfect order imposed by punishment and terror. The other side of lawful evil is the bargain. The Prince of Darkness is a gentleman, and Asmodeus always keeps his word. Again, later on, we're told that the ruby rod that he carries prevents him from breaking his word, prevents him from breaking the law, from breaking his contracts. This is his excuse. Asmodeus doesn't make anybody do anything they don't want to do. He plays fair, or so he says. He's explicitly described as the most handsome of devils. In episode 11, I called him Vincent Price, and I think that that's fair enough. One should envision Asmodeus as a sort of plummy Shakespearean actor, urbane, witty, even sensitive. You're lucky when you get a monster who acts like a monster. You know where you stand with Demogorgon. That creep's got tentacles and not one, but two baboon heads. He looks like what he is, a freak. Asmodeus is what you get when someone with the right tie and ideal taste in opera orders your village burnt to the ground. Asmodeus's bargain is an elaborate pretense. Asmodeus is so lawful. The bargain is always made of your own free choice. No one's holding a gun to your head. But do you ever notice how people who say that conveniently forget any form of coercion short of holding a gun to your head? I don't think that Asmodeus turns up with that piece of paper and offers his bargain to people who really are in a position to make a free choice. I think that by the time you're in that room, all of your other options have already been closed off. And I think that some of the time that's your own short-sighted and venal doing. And I think some of the time, you know, Asmodeus might have had a little hand in it. Or his cults, Again, later writers elaborate that Asmodeus is served by cults, a network of these evil conspiracies throughout society. Ironically, a little bit like the network of Satanists envisioned by believers in the Satanic Panic. Asmodeus always abides by the letter of the law, but he knows in advance that he's going to do that, and that gives him a great advantage. Finally, one of the things about Asmodeus is that he is an ideal Dungeons & Dragons villain. I've talked before about how the typical Dungeons & Dragons character is probably chaotic good. In the main, D&D characters are good, and in the main, they tend to be roguish Han Solo or Robin Hood types. They definitely want to stop Demogorgon from unleashing a tsunami of horrific demon monsters onto the earth and gobbling up everybody's grandma. They want to stop the devotees of chaotic evil who are out there murdering at random or chiseling away at the support structures of society. But I don't know that they hate Demogorgon and his minions. They hate Asmodeus. And that leads us to part 4, Asmodeus in play. Here are some suggestions for ways to incorporate Asmodeus into your D&D game, or your whatever game. Ways to incorporate your setting's devil into your game. Defeated by the PCs, a villain sells their soul to Asmodeus in exchange for the power to exact revenge. For Asmodeus, this is a win-win. Maybe the PCs get defeated and Asmodeus' evil plans can proceed unchecked, or alternatively, maybe this person fails and Asmodeus gets their soul. Whoever loses, Asmodeus wins. Seeking a difficult goal, a sympathetic NPC foolishly sells their soul to Asmodeus. Asmodeus preys on the desperate, on people who have nowhere left to turn. Maybe, in many cases, idealistic people who really believe that what they're doing is a good thing, and that if they could just get the help that they need in the form of, you know, evil supernatural powers, they'd be able to do something good. Those are the kind of people that wind up selling their souls to the devil. Also dirtbags, which we will discuss later. Next. Battling demons, the PCs find themselves working alongside an order of demon hunters who turn out to worship Asmodeus. Or, seeking to challenge the Dark Lord, a lesser devil hires the PCs to retrieve an artifact capable of harming or repelling him. I've spoken before about how I do like the idea that Hell has this strict hierarchy, but like, we have this belief that police states are efficient, and actually they're kind of not. To pick the most obvious example, Nazi Germany was a ramshackle mess of different government agencies competing with each other, spying on each other, you know, trying to discredit each other. Not an efficient top-down structure controlled by a single objective, but a culture that fetishized power and proximity to its rulers rather than, you know, being good at things. Police states feel like they should be efficient. All those neatly pressed uniforms and shiny boots, but it doesn't really work out like that. It's all for show. So I like the idea that free agents, like player characters, are ideal ways for the various devils to mess with each other without risking too much blowback. If your PCs are very successful, then maybe hearing of their great deeds, cultists of Asmodeus begin studying their sins with an eye to recruiting them. I think that the cultists of Asmodeus, or of devils in general, have an eye for human weakness. You know, see your PCs and attempt to find the ways in which they can be manipulated so that the cultists of Asmodeus can get them on their side, knowingly or unknowingly. One of the worst things about Asmodeus, like, you know, even if you were to unseat him, and, you know, Asmodeus wants to be the supreme ruler of the cosmos, but he's got a long way to go. It's interesting to see the power creep occurring even within a few short years of the Monster Manual, because Asmodeus going up against, like, any two regular gods or any one pantheon head would have his lunch eaten. Like, not even close. You know, if the dominant god in your cosmos is Zeus or whatever, Asmodeus is not much to trouble Zeus. Asmodeus out here rocking a mere 199 hit points. But if you get rid of him, you're just gonna have to deal with a hell run by Dispater or Baal-Zebul or Mephistopheles. Like, it all amounts to the same thing. They're all just the same creep with slightly different special interests. So another possible scenario is overthrown by Mephistopheles or Glacier or someone. A disguised Asmodeus recruits the PCs to help aid in his restoration. One thing PCs often do is work as bounty hunters. So if someone who sold their soul to Asmodeus had somehow evaded the transaction, the cult could hire the PCs in that capacity. And it might be something that they want to do, right? I mean, we're talking about the kind of person who would sell their soul to Satan in the first place. Probably, but not necessarily, a dirtbag then, and unlikely to be any better now. A lot of these scenarios rest on the fact that Asmodeus is evil, but reasonable, or at least outwardly reasonable. Ultimately, Asmodeus doesn't just want to defeat you. Asmodeus wants you to agree with him. He doesn't just want to be the ruler of the cosmos. He wants you to abandon the part of you that says, maybe we shouldn't have a monstrous tyrant as ruler of the cosmos. He wants you to think he's right. And so being outwardly reasonable is a big part of that. By the time you start thinking, you know, this Asmodeus guy makes some good points, you're already in trouble. I've been going through this on the assumption that the PCs are dealing with Asmodeus's influence in the prime material plane, rather than, like, going down into hell and confronting him where he sits at the pinnacle, or the kind of inverse pinnacle, since the worst bits of hell are down from the less worse bits, of this hierarchy of suffering. There, Asmodeus trades on hopelessness. Ultimately, there's not much you can do about him. The best outcome for you, and it's vanishingly unlikely, is that you replace him with someone equally awful. Because while you might stop a particular evil plan, or you might bring a particular evildoer to justice, you are no closer to getting rid of evil. And as long as Asmodeus's particular brand of evil exists, he or someone like him exists. That's a bleak message, but I think that there is scope for heroism against that bleak background. And I think that if you're looking for someone to give that kind of scope for heroism, Asmodeus is a pretty good example. So all right, those are some thoughts on Asmodeus, some info on his backstory, and some examples of possible things you could do with him in a game. John, I hope that you enjoyed this special episode. Thank you once again for your support. It means a lot to me. Remember that if you'd like to be like John and get your own special episode, all you gotta do is go to patreon.com/monsterman and pledge at the $5 level, or you could pledge at another level if you prefer, or no level at all. It's all up to you. If you would like to support the show, but doing so financially is not an option, one thing you could do that would be really useful would be to tell a friend who might enjoy it. Or, alternatively, you could leave a rating or review on the podcasting app of your choice. In our next episode, we'll be returning to Creature Catalog, the 1986 supplement for Basic Dungeons & Dragons, and we're going to talk about some more undead monsters, and we are getting pretty close to the end, so we'll follow that with some wrap-up thoughts on Creature Catalog. So please join me then for Monster Man, a show about monsters, because monsters are great. Thank you for listening. If you have a favorite monster or something you'd like me to talk about, you can reach me on Twitter at GonzoHistory or by email, gonzohistory@gmail.com. To support Monster Man, just go to patreon.com/monsterman. Thank you to Ray Otis for designing the thumbnail image. Our introductory music is Solve the Damn Mystery by Jesse Spillane from the album Descent of the Goober Monster, used under a Creative Commons attribution license. Thank you again for listening, and please join us next time.